Thanks for checking out this bonus interview with John David Mann for Chapter 9 of Performance Driven Giving. My name is Kent Sanders, and I'm a writer who collaborated with David Hancock and Bobby Kipper on the book. Just a quick note before we get to the conversation. You may notice that these interviews have a bit of a different feel than what you're used to hearing on a podcast interview or in another setting. The reason is because these have been edited for clarity and flow to let the material on giving really shine through. We appreciate you listening and hope you enjoy this conversation with John David Mann. So I've only got four questions. If there's anything that you want to add, feel free to, and we can definitely put it in there. So
I haven't prepared. I never do, but that's okay because
it's all good. It's all good.
We both lived our lives.
So this chapter that your interview comes at the end of is a chapter on, it's called The Power of Starting Small. It's about developing a giving habit by starting small. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where these questions are going a little bit.
Awesome.
Okay, here's the first question. A lot of people don't give or they're not generous because they feel like it represents a big change in their lives. It feels intimidating and scary. What are some simple ways that people can give and be generous in a small way? They can just start down that path. It doesn't feel scary or intimidating. They can just start out with a small habit.
So I can just riff, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally.
I mean, the first thing that occurs to me, because we've just been working on this book, The Go-Giver Marriage, is that, you know, one place where it starts is it starts at home. And I think that if we're in a primary relationship, or any of the relationships that we're in, friendships, colleagueships, relationships, including, you know, parent and child and brother and sister and so on. I think that can start at home in the sense of finding little ways. And I do think that starting small is incredibly powerful. So I'm going to interrupt myself and say, first off, I think breaking it down into baby steps, into small steps is key simply because it's not intimidating. You know, there's this idea that the way we grow is to get out of our comfort zone. And I don't hold with that. The way I think we grow is to stay in our comfort zone, but stretch that zone, stretch the boundaries of that zone. If you jump out of your comfort zone, do something that makes you uncomfortable, it's easy to freeze and you don't perform at maximum. But if you stay where you're comfortable, but push a little, stretch it a little, then it's much, much easier and you can perform at your best. So finding small ways to give naturally stretch with the people that are around you. And that can be as simple as spending a few minutes listening to somebody. There's a tremendous deficiency of listening in our culture. It's made much worse by social media because there's so many more avenues to talk that it has even further diminished or eclipsed the simple practice of listening, which has always been in short supply, but is more so now. So being a listening person, going the extra mile, making the effort when given a choice to be kind. One of the principles in our Go-Giver Marriage book is to be allowing. And by allow, what we mean is give the other person the benefit of the doubt. When you have an opportunity to be annoyed at something, choose the path of not being annoyed at it and just say to yourself, you know, they probably got a very good reason for being cranky right now, or whatever. Little ways of being, of behaving generously. Behaving, you use the word generous, and I love that word. Behaving with generosity with the people around us have three benefits. They feed the relationship because they make that person feel good. They make ourselves feel good. We feel good after being generous with somebody when we didn't have to be, when we give them space where we didn't have to, where we let an argument go when we didn't have to. We feel better about ourselves, and also it's good practice. Is practicing being a giving, generous person. I do think the same thing applies to people who aren't right around us, people we don't know as well, strangers, people we bump into, people we might have. This happens with me, for example. Sometimes people write to me hoping that I'll, you know, write a book with them or read their book. You know, critique their book or something that is too big for me to say yes to. I can't say yes. I'm so sorry. I can't write that book with you. I can't read your book. I don't have enough time free to do that. But I generally find little ways that I can do what they want in a way that really supports their moving forward as a writer. Mm. I bring this to writing because that's how a lot of my interactions show up. So I will say to somebody, you know, I can't promise to read your whole book, but what I can promise I'll do is I'll read the first chapter if you're willing to hear my honest feedback. And I'm going to be brutally honest, but I'm going to be constructively honest. Mm-hmm. And I'll do that. And it's amazing how much I learn. And I don't know if this directly relates to the wording of your question, but I think it might relate to that, which is, you know, I tend to be jealous of my time. I tend to be possessive with my time because I have this sort of like illusion of time scarcity, the way a lot of us have money scarcity illusions. I have time scarcity illusions, like, oh, there's not enough time. If I give this person 15 minutes, then I won't have it for my own activity, and so I'll be poorer. It's not true, but I have that reflex. I think a lot of us do. One way I get out of that is I discover that giving this person that 15 minutes, giving the feedback on the chapter, giving them the comments, you know, taking the time to make a referral or to do whatever it is that I can do. Kent, man, it's amazing how often I learn out of that and how much I learn out of that. When I was, a quick story, as I was writing for a magazine, I was editor-in-chief for a magazine many years ago, a business magazine. And I'd been there for, I don't know, 10 years, a long time. And I had a great relationship with the publisher and his wife, who was sort of his co-publisher, but who was gradually becoming more involved in the magazine. And I reached a point where I needed to leave the magazine because I needed to spend more time with writing books. And so I said, you know, I got to resign. I hate to do it, but my time is up, you know? And they said, and I said, I promise you though, that I will help you find my replacement. And so I did. And we looked at this person and the next person and the next person, and nobody was right. And finally, the publisher's wife, who was a brilliant woman, but English is her third language, right? So she stepped in and said, I'll do it. I'll be editor in chief, but I might need a little help. For the next 2 or 3 years, I don't remember how long, it was a long time, I entered into this relationship with her where I coached her on writing. I mean, I probably poured, you know, 100 hours, maybe 200 hours into that, into explaining to her exactly how I edit something, why I change the sentence or why I change that word or how I change this article or why I take this whole piece from the front and put it at the end or why I take this whole page and throw it out and condense. And man, it was such an education for her. It was such an education for me. I mean, she should have paid me. I should have paid her, is what I'm trying to say. I should have paid them for those 100 hours because I learned so much about editing because I'd never had to explain it to somebody. And in the course of explaining it, I found that I had to understand it better. And I became a vastly better editor myself in that process. So, you know, the bottom line of it is like what Bob and I call Pindar's principle. The more you give, the more you have. The more you give, the more it enriches the giver.
I love that. That's wonderful. So speaking of storytelling and books, actually, I'm going to skip this next question. I'm going to redo this next question because I'm really curious. As a writer and as a storyteller, what do you feel is the connection between storytelling and generosity? Or is there a connection? I've never even thought about that before, but there seems to be something fundamental about the fact that we love stories, we consume stories, we tell stories every day. Is there a connection between that and giving and generosity in some way?
I think that there is, I'm going to kind of rattle around that and we'll see what comes up. But I mean, the first thing I'll say is that this is certainly true of being a writer. And I imagine it's true of being a storyteller in general. Certainly true, I know, of being a stand-up comedian from what I've heard, is that you have to it takes a certain amount of ego to be a good storyteller simply because you have to feel like I've got something to tell. Like I, you're going to stand up in front of a whole bunch of people and get their attention. You have to feel like you've got something to say, but you have to have the tremendous ability to set your ego aside in the feedback process, in the improvement process. With it, with a writer, it's really obvious because your stuff's going to get edited first by yourself and then later by others. And the biggest roadblock for most writers to the process of becoming a better writer is your relationship with the editing process, self-editing and other editing. You know, I know that for a comedian, stand-up, it's brutal. The process of becoming a better comedian because you test jokes and they fall flat. Well, you know, with a writer, it's the same. You write sentences and they stink. They suck. They're horrible. They're awful. You write a whole page and you think, this is brilliant. You go back the next day and you go, what was I thinking? What was I smoking? You know, or you think it's brilliant. You give it to somebody you trust who is, you know, you give it to your wife, your husband, your editor, and they say, it's got promise. Which means it's not very good. And so this isn't exactly generosity, but there's a great, you have to have a healthy enough ego to be able to set it aside and not be attached to it. I guess in that sense, you also kind of have to give yourself to the story, like give yourself to the audience, give yourself to the reader. If you're focused on, you know how in The Go-Giver, and Bob and I always say the whole principle of the book, The Go-Giver, is to take the focus off yourself and put it on the other person. It's not self-abasement. It's not, you know, martyrdom. It's simply a shift of focus. That really is true for being a storyteller. I mean, you kind of have to shift your focus from yourself to your listener, to your audience, to your reader, because that's who the story is for. I mean, it process. You'll have a lot of fun to do in the process. You love it, you enjoy it, but it's ultimately something you're doing for other people. You're telling a story for other people to read, to listen to hear. So you have to be all about what do they want? What do they need? Who are they? Yeah.
I love that. That's wonderful. I hadn't planned on asking that question, but I love your response to that.
That's a new one. No one's ever asked that one before. It's interesting. Yeah. But I think it's true. Yeah.
One of the questions that I have asked most of the other interviewees for this book is actually based on the fifth principle that you talk about in the original Go-Giver book, which is stay open to receiving. That has thrown everybody for a loop because to a person, everybody has said, I struggle with receiving. I love giving. I love being generous, but I struggle with receiving things.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Why do we have trouble receiving gifts and generosity and help from other people?
I do think that it's, you know, I don't think it's natural necessarily. That is, I don't think it's inevitable. I don't think it's built into the human psyche, but I do think it's unsurprising. I think it's something we have to actually learn. You know, it'd be nice if it was something we were taught at a young age, but you know, typically it's not because there's so many things that it never occurs to people to teach. That is how to graciously receive. You know, when we were kids, some of us anyway, when we were kids, maybe younger people today, not so, I don't know, but we were, you know, after our birthday or after Christmas, you know, our mom or our aunt or our grandmom sat us down and said, okay, it's time to write your thank you notes. We learned how to write thank you notes. Well, it's kind of like learning how to write thank you notes. It's learning how to say thank you graciously and, you know, and accept the gift. I think that there's a part of it, which is that, you know how we say every person is the hero of their own story.
Yeah.
I think we all like to think of ourselves as, you know, good people, heroes of our story. And I think we all, you know, fundamentally kind of are that really. We can get into talking about, you know, the fundamental nature of humanity and whether we're, you know, we're full of sin and flawed or whether we're made in God's image or, you know, what's the scoop here with human beings. There's a lot that's messed up about us. There's no doubt about that. But that said, you know, human beings have created an awful lot of beauty and kindness and growth and service over the millennia. There can't be any doubt that we're that there's an awful lot of good in us. And I think there's somehow we've got this cultural message, which is that it's better to give than to receive. That getting paid is dirty somehow. That being the recipient is less noble, and it's more noble to be the generous giver. I mean, there's no doubt that being a generous giver is a noble thing. But hey, guess what? Being a generous receiver is a good thing too. That's a noble thing, in fact. And that is just a little trickier for people to wrap their heads around. Hmm. Again, I think it's because we're not trained early on. If you're trained early on, you know, if you grow up that way, then it's like second nature. Yeah. So when someone says, I read, you know, The Red Circle, or I read The Goal Giver, or I read The Recipe, or read one of your books, and I just love that book. I am totally tickled, and I say, oh, thank you so much. But, you know, I know I don't have the impulse to say, oh, nah, it's a piece of trash. I'm sorry. You like that book? Yeah, you're an idiot. You got bad taste. even as a joke, it doesn't occur to me to say it, you know, but we will say those kinds of things. You know, I think that it's, you know how much we love the the mythos of the underdog. Everyone loves an underdog. Everyone hates a tycoon. Hmm. You know, everyone kind of has this Schadenfreude, right? They love to see the powerful fall. And everyone has this sort of cultural mythos of the successful, accomplished, wealthy person is cheated somehow to get there. And, you know, it must be something like bad about them. Slippery somewhere. Ill-gotten gains must have happened in there somewhere. And so why would we want to be that person? Therefore, why would I want to receive something? Why would I want to get paid? Why would I want to get paid handsomely for something? Because it might make me, you know, rich. Mm-hmm. it's just cultural immaturity.
Yeah.
It's just cultural immaturity, and we just haven't trained ourselves out of it.
Wow. I love that. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation with John David Mann, and encourage you to check out the other interviews in the bonus content for Performance Driven Giving.